Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Welcome to Dream Big today, you guys. I'm so excited. You have no idea. Well, of course you don't have an idea. We have my very first musical guest. You know, when I started this radio show, everyone expected me to have all music because I am a musician, but I decided to spread the wealth and bring in all kinds of interesting people. But I do have to say that I'm very excited for today because we have the sexy, the swanky, the get your hips moving in ways that your mama doesn't want to know about, Woodward Avenue recording artist, Ben Sharkey. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Jill. How's it going? I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited about this.
I am too. I was so happy that you said yes and that you could make it in because I'm sure you're very, very busy coming up.
Things are crazy right now. Yes.
And we'll get to that for sure. Ben has a new CD out, and I am telling you that I didn't know what to expect from this CD, but I've seen you perform live, and I know what I've seen you do to people who I know sometimes don't even know how to move on a dance floor, and you get them to do things that I always like, wow, who knew? but I just want to talk to you about, you know, who Ben Sharkey is, really. You know, obviously, for those who don't know, he's an amazing singer, songwriter, performer, entertainer, just the list goes on. And I do believe we'll see him at the Grammys someday.
Oh, thank you.
but let's talk about where it all started. You know, I was reading up on your bio and some background and stuff, and I saw something that I thought was adorable. It was about how you were influenced as a child. Uh-huh. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Your grandmother and your mother, and you were 6 years old, ring a bell?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that story?
So yes, my grandmother kind of forced us to watch musicals as a kid, and I had three brothers and myself, and we're rambunctious, and musicals were probably the last thing that we wanted to watch.
No doubt.
You know, we wanted to watch G.I. Joe or some kind of, you know, action flick or superhero kind of thing at the time. And she made us watch The Sound of Music and, Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah.
All those very good-hearted.
My mom made me do the same thing. We came from a family of five. Same thing. We were surrounded by musicals.
Exactly.
We had a lot of girls, though.
And I remember watching her and how they influenced her and how they entertained her and how it made her so happy. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me, even though I was kind of like, you know, this is, I guess maybe I was a little in denial as well because I didn't want to like it, but I was entertained by it.
Right.
And I remember all the male vocalists on there, the vocals were just so smooth and trained and mm-hmm. beautiful and suave. And I was like, that's kind of cool. I think I could do that.
And so there was something that I read that it was something about It's My Party, the song, and you were like 6 years old and you like nailed it.
Oh yeah.
So your family recognized your vocal talents early on then.
Yeah, they did. My mom, going back to my grandfather on my mom's side, he actually owned a music venue in Flint back in the day.
No kidding. What was it called?
I don't know.
That's okay.
It's that family is a little bit of a mystery to me. My grandpa passed when I was young, and mm-hmm. I just didn't really get that information. I wish I kind of knew that this question was coming up.
Oh, so sorry.
I could do that.
No, don't even worry
research,
about it.
But,
hey, I'm all about it. People ask me where my grandfather worked, and I don't know, and I should know. But so he had a music venue, and so that was a little bit of influence.
So there's like music on my mom's side of the family. My mom has a great voice, but she never really pursued it just mm-hmm. because, you know, she had kids early, and she just had to survive, you know, just working the day shift and night shift and whatever she could.
Now, your brothers, did they sing?
We all kind of messed around with beats and guitar and piano and that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. we never, you know, we didn't form a brother band or anything like that. Although we probably could have.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Because everyone just kind of had that in them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But exactly. You decided. So when, you know, when did you decide to, and I, you know, and I know as a musician, I hate this question, but, you know, so I can't believe I'm asking you, but I am curious, you know, there's, for me, when I decided to sing, you know, thinking professionally, it wasn't till later on, you know, in my 20s. Was there ever a time, I mean, I know I daydreamed about it though, a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I was that chick with the, you know, the brush staring in the, the mirror, you know, trying to hit all the high notes of all the singers that I loved. Did you have that passion? Did you do that or is it, or was it a different path?
I think it really struck me probably around fifth grade when there's all the boy bands that were out there. And I remember how the teenage girls were just really into it and they just were just starstruck all the time. And they had the stickers and, you know, the Trapper Keepers and that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh,
that were
just
the fan memorabilia. And I was like, wow, you know, this is really interesting effect. I didn't know the effect that it had on people.
Right.
Because at that point, I just knew the effect that music had on me and not how it really, like you, I mean, I watched MTV and you see how the fans fan out, but it doesn't, that's like TV land. You don't really know how it affects you until it's around your peers and that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, then that's when it really hit home for me. And I'm like, you know, I could do that kind of stuff. And I was a huge fan of Michael Jackson and I wanted to be like him anyway.
Oh, wow,
and so it was kind of like that kind of, that push of the industry of the boy band and that kind of effect.
Now you got in front of the, you know, whole YouTube craze. I mean, it you know, you started just recording like songs like Michael Bublé and Frank Sinatra and all that.
Yeah.
How did you get, for one, how did you choose the genre? Like, why did you choose the genre?
So that will have to go back. It's funny because when I was in my teens, and up until my senior year in high school, I was really big into pop and R&B. Like I loved Boys to Men and Brian McKnight. And
this explains a lot about you.
Exactly.
And why I feel the way I feel when I listen to your music. Okay. Right.
Like in Genuine and, you know, even Justin Timberlake all them, all the pop dancey kind of stuff I was really into. And then my senior year in high school, I actually moved out of the country, out of my mom's house.
Wow. Where'd you go?
The countryside and into Ann Arbor with some friends. And they were all in college and I was still in high school. And I somehow finagled my way to go to Ann Arbor High School without my, you know, parents being involved. And I did that. And so while I was hanging out and doing my duty as a roommate, cleaning up, my older roommate had a big CD collection and all these different genres in there. And I tipped it over being clumsy and Harry Connick Jr. CD fell out.
Yes.
And I was like, this is kind of a cool album cover. It was the Red Light Blue Light album where he's just sitting there like the thinking man and it's all in blue, shades of blue. And I popped it in and instantly like that big band sound came in and like he had this voice that was just really strong and cool and suave, and I loved the lyrics and just the everything. And it's funny because that just like circled back all the show tunes and that kind of feeling of the big band and entertainment. You know, the American standards and stuff. And it just kind of like, it was almost like a movie scene where just like all like just something clicked.
Right. So that's when it clicked.
And that's,
you know, the fact that you were a senior and the cover itself, that you noticed that you noticed the colors, that affected you. I mean, not everybody has that, you know, observation.
Right.
So obviously your creative juices were flowing.
Yeah. Well, I'm an artist as well.
Yes, I do. Yeah, we're getting that.
So that's where it really clicked that I got into the jazz genre.
Okay. All right. And then, but the YouTube videos, you've got like millions of views, right?
Yeah.
That's what I read.
Yeah. I'm Approaching 6 million.
Oh my God. Yeah. What's your secret? I mean, I know.
Well, there's a lot of videos that I only got like 100 views on.
Mm-hmm.
And then back in the day, they did this like feature kind of thing. And, you know, YouTube was just gaining its ground.
Right.
And they said, you have to do an original to get featured. You can't do a cover.
Okay.
So at that point, I had already gained some traction with posting Michael Bublé videos and mm-hmm. jazz covers and that kind of stuff. And so I had a friend that I had in Canada through YouTube, and he was a producer and a songwriter. And he's like, hey, I wrote this song. How about you sing it for this, you know, this original thing? And so it's a cutesy song. It was called Can I? And it's just like, it's just really basic. Like, can I take you home? Do this kind of stuff. It's
a
pop tune.
Simple. Don't underestimate simple.
It's very simple. It's cute. And so it got featured. And I think that song got, I think, like, 200 views in like a couple days. 200,000 views. Sorry.
I was going to say, so jokes on you to think it's too simple
exactly.
and cutesy.
Yeah. But it's funny because with that attraction, you know, you get all the positive attraction, and then you get the negative people that
Ouch.
Just want to hate. You
Ouch.
Know? I know.
Why is it one negative?
It just comes with the territory.
It does.
It really does.
How do you deal with that?
You know, at first I would take it so personally.
Mm-hmm. It's hard not to. Isn't
yeah,
it?
It's hard not to. But secondly, after you know, I grew some thick skin, I realized that it wasn't about me at all.
You nailed it. You're absolutely right. I mean, I know when I'll get. I have to say, in 25 years of my career, mm-hmm. I haven't had hate mail per se.
Yeah.
I have only had one or two really get, you know, go for the jugular.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, at first you feel like somebody punched you in the stomach because you're like, dude, why'd you take the time to even do that? Like, go grocery shopping. Like, don't, if you don't like me, just like,
yeah,
but
exactly.
On the other hand, it truly is about them. And when I responded with kindness
mm-hmm.
and everyone else was bashing him, like everybody came to my defense, and I'm like, nope. He's allowed to have his opinion.
Yeah.
And then he came back and it was really, he explained in depth. It was about him.
Yeah.
He was just frustrated in his own career.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God. So we became friends for more than one reason. I don't ever want to get that email again.
I know, right. You know, that happens, and that's exactly it. And you know, people were really mean because I have a birthmark on my face.
I love your birthmark. I have one on my knee.
Thank you.
It's fading.
Oh, yeah.
Where did it go? Oh, it's on that side. It's been a while since I looked at it. I'm showing some skin here to Ben.
You forget it. You forget it's there until someone points it out to you.
Right.
But anyway, you know, I had somebody that put peanut butter on their face, like mocking me, like doing a video, and someone pepperoni, a piece of pepperoni they put on that just stuck to their face and pretending they were me. It's like, wow, that took some effort.
Yeah, but, you know, really, you should put your energy into something else, bud.
Exactly.
I know.
And you know what? There was a time where I was focusing on that because I just did not like anyone not liking me, or, you know, I wanted to defend myself,
you know,
some reason. I didn't really understand where it was coming from until later. Then I was like, okay, you know what? There's so many people that are giving me positive energy. I need to focus on them.
Yeah. I heard this story once, and I have to remind myself every time I perform. Sammy Davis Jr. was playing at Carnegie Hall,
mm-hmm.
sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And all he could focus on was one guy got up. He was like in the back top row and he could focus. He left. And that's all he could focus on was that guy left.
Yeah.
And he's like, here I have a whole sold out Carnegie show and I'm focusing on the one dude that left. And I do the same thing. I think it's hard in life. But because one negative to a million positive for some reason is really strong. But as artists, mm-hmm. we lay our hearts out.
Mm-hmm.
And so people.
You're vulnerable up there on stage.
Yeah. It's truly, truly, thank God I don't have to be naked, but it is a lot like being naked up there, you know?
It is.
And, well, let me just say that you have nothing to worry about. So,
thank you.
I have seen you perform and I am just blown away by your natural ability to be sexy. Not everybody can do that. You know, you can see people like work it in like in their, at least as an artist, I really kind of watch performers. Uh-huh. And I mean, I think you could take a corpse and get them to get up and get moving. I really do. So
well, thank you.
I do want to talk about your journey into original songwriting. Your new album, you wrote or co-wrote every song. Is that correct?
All the lyrics are yours. Yes. And all the melodies and everything. And I took it to, I'm just, you know, I've messed around with the piano and the guitar and I can play some simple chords and stuff, but I felt like it inhibited me from my songwriting with the music.
So it slowed the process down a little bit.
Yeah, it slowed the process down, and, you know, my chord progressions and changes were very basic. Mm-hmm. And so instead of doing that to myself, I took it to a professional. Chris Kodish is amazing.
Yeah. His father is an incredible composer as well, I believe.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I believe he was a great writer and composer. I'm pretty sure I'll have to double check that. That's not fake news, ladies and gentlemen.
I did work with Takashi Iyo on Champagne Pop. He's the one that helped me out with that one. And then Bob Mervak on Red Lipstick.
You have a powerhouse of musicians.
And they're all good
ones. And for those of you that aren't from Detroit, the people that he's mentioning are Detroit musicians who are hot. I mean, they are hot. And they've been at it for so long. And I've worked with every one of the men you talked about. And they're all talented in their own right. So when I saw the lineup on your album, I'm like, well, this just can't go anywhere up, people. So it's gonna be fantastic. I would like to talk to you about you got signed by Woodward Avenue Records, right?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, it was kind of a word of mouth kind of thing. They reached out to me. It seemed like the right fit. They wanted, they're a smooth jazz label.
Right.
And they kind of wanted to expand their horizons into more like the crossover poppy kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so since I have pop and swing and jazz on this album, it just seemed to be a natural fit.
Good marriage. Yeah. Good marriage there. Yeah. Because it can be, you know, in our industry, it's like iffy if you sign. Should you sign? Shouldn't you sign? How's that going to work for you? Will it inhibit you? Will it enhance you?
Exactly.
So I wish the best for all of
much.
That for sure.
Thank you.
Now, you know, this year was my first year that my daughter paid for me to go to art school.
Oh.
And I took my first lessons in painting. It's something I always wanted to do. And when I saw the painting that you do, I was like, oh no, he's got to be lying. How can he do that? I'm born on Elvis Presley's birthday. So when I saw your Elvis painting, I just want to know, can I have that? Just kidding.
Will be available in print.
Are you kidding?
Oh my God.
It is just so amazing. We'll give you all the information about Ben's, you know, website and his art, where you can find everything. But when did you start? It said you started selling your artwork when you were in like sixth grade. Is that right?
I would sell it to my fellow students.
I would do that.
Portraits
for
them. Yeah. I would
really?
Do portraits. Yep.
Now, did you take art classes or it just came natural in grade school?
So my mom, as well as a musician and being a singer, she was also an artist. And then my dad's sister was a storyboard artist and art director.
Okay.
And she does, her name is Maureen Sharkey. You could look her up. She does these amazing photorealistic but expressionistic kind of paintings.
Mm-hmm.
She did this whole series of the Chicago Bears when they went to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Back in the 80s or early 90s, I forget. But I would spend a lot of summers with her, and we would just be painting in her studio, and she'd give me tips and everything. And so that kind of just
lovely.
Worked out. Yeah.
So jealous right here. So jealous. How do you compare your painting, as far as, you know, I know for me as a songwriter, I know certain processes I feel, just after 12 albums, I realize when a song's coming, it's kind of like giving birth, you know, it's here it is. And so I know what to do, but in regard to painting, is it something more where you're commissioned and then you go ahead and do it? Or do you Do you have those moments where you're like, I'm just going to, is it the same feeling with your songwriting or is it different?
It's similar in the sense that when you are writing an album, you're kind of thinking of all the songs that kind of work together in that album, and you kind of want to paint a story, basically. Yeah. And so I've been working on series of paintings to do, you know, exhibitions with. And so it's kind of similar to that. So each painting is kind of like a track in that album, basically. And so I'm actually currently working on a series of paintings called The Invisible Gentleman, and where it's men in amazing suits, but they're invisible. But it's all like very high fashion, you know, bespoke tailoring, just fitted really nicely, but the men are not there.
Right. I took a peek at that. That is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
And it, I don't know why, but there's something about it that has a timelessness about it, but yet makes me feel a little 1950s-ish, maybe. Am I right? In that era or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it just, it's stunning. I mean, I really.
Thank you.
And is that going to be available for purchase or how does that work?
In the spring.
In the spring. So you just have a few little things on your plate.
I need some time for it.
How are you at multitasking?
Yeah, this, I mean, not that great. this album has taken up a lot of time, and the show that's coming up soon is, I'm really excited about that.
Let's talk about that show.
Yes.
I can't wait. I hope I can go.
Oh, of course.
So it's September 13th. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell the listeners what they can expect?
Thursday, September 13th, 2018.
Yes, there you go.
in the near future. So it's all the songs on my album, Mercury Rising, which is kind of like the swingy kind of throwback kind of sound. But then I experiment with some percussive beats and also some housey stuff and some funk.
Right.
And then I'm tying in some songs from my older album and then a couple covers in there just to have something familiar for the audience that, you know, may not know me.
Sure.
As well as some of the Sharksters and Sharkettes out there.
I like that.
Yeah. So Sean Blackman is opening up the night for me, and he's a local musician, also international.
He is international. You've never seen him perform, that's a show in itself. It's just so visual as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's moves amazing. Everybody. I mean, this thing's going to be dripping with sex, people. Sorry, it's all I gotta say. Both these men are just, you just better plan on having a cigarette after. I'm just kidding.
So,
no smoking.
So
anyway,
he'll be on at 7:30. The doors open at 7. So we'll have a little entrance and the red carpet, that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now you're gonna have, tell me a little bit about the band lineup. You're
11 piece band. The Woodward horns, the four of the horns.
Fabulous.
I've got, just a 5 or 6 part rhythm section and some backing vocalists that are in there.
And I heard there might be some dancing going on.
There's some dancers.
I have six dancers.
Yeah, tonight.
Six. Oh my God.
I'm going tonight to do a rehearsal. I'm so excited.
I bet you are. That is incredible.
Yeah. A stage is being built by Garage Events me. And I just had a preview of it. It's going to be really cool. It's going to get all these tiers and stuff to it.
So what people have to understand is, you know, a lot of us, I've had 12 CD releases as well. Mm-hmm. And it is so much work. It is like putting on a wedding. It's just like putting on a wedding. It takes so much work. People don't realize how many little details you have to. And being an artist, even if you have an event planner, even if you have a manager, you still want who you are reflected. So you have to oversee everything. So what he's doing here is an incredible, it's way above what we don't always get to see that kind of CD release. So I invite anyone, and I mean anyone, fly in. Why not?
Why not?
Give them the details again real quick. Ben Sharkey,
yes.
Mercury Rising album CD release.
Mm-hmm. Tickets are available on bensharkey.com or through Eventbrite if you search for Mercury Rising Ben Sharkey.
Absolutely. And it was such a pleasure to have you. I do want to say that this show was sponsored by 20 Front Street, and you've played at 20 Front Street, haven't
you?
Oh,
great. Yes.
They are located in a quaint village of Lake Orion, Michigan. It's where artists and audiences can connect in a unique oh my gosh, this is hard to say, unique, intimate way. So thanks so much, 20 Front Street. And Ben Sharkey, I am going to come see you, and I expect everyone else
Please
will be
do.
There too.
Please do.
Take care.